Hey, hey, and welcome to Cheers to Leaving. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Cameron.
And today we are concluding our Purity Culture series with a very special guest. And that special guest was a pastor's kid that underwent a significant transformation after moving to New York City, where she encountered diverse perspectives. Her journey led her to question her upbringing, particularly regarding her faith and views on sexuality, culminating in her popular blog, God, Sex, and Rich People. Through her writing, she candidly explores topics such as deconstruction, purity culture, and her experiences as an ex-evangelical navigating life in the city. Her blog eventually led to a pilot series premiered at the Omaha Film Festival in 2023, and now she's set to release a book with the same title slated for September 10th, 2024. So everyone, please welcome to the podcast, Maddie Jo.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, it's me.
I know.
Hi. It's always so weird when you're doing a podcast. It's like, well, there's not an audience right now, but yeah.
We need a sound effect that just like giant applause comes out.
The applause, yes.
And
the theater
theme
kid
song.
I need it.
Mm-hmm. Cameron, where's that at?
I'll get on that. We'll do it in post. It's fine.
Just like a game show, like, come on down, Maddie Jo, have a seat. And it's like,
the price is right. Yeah, totally. Exactly. Yes. Yes.
That's what we need, because that's what happens in my head when I'm like, welcome, everyone.
Right. I know. Okay. I'm like a raucous applause. I'm a theater kid. I need it, you know?
Oh, you're a theater kid. Why are all of us theater kids? We had to get it out somewhere.
Yeah.
All our angst. Yeah. So welcome. How are you today?
I gotta be honest. I'm a little, I'm great now, but all day I was so tired and I was so annoyed at how tired I was. Cause I was like, I got like 8.5 hours of sleep and I hate that. I hate when you're like in bed with a book by 9:45 and then you're still tired the next day. It's like, I could have just stayed up
you
and like doom scrolled
ritual.
For another. Yeah.
Yeah.
But instead,
it is annoying.
Yeah,
it is
but
annoying.
Other than that, I'm great. Things are good.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, we're really excited to have you, and I'm excited to chat with you about all of the things. I feel like you're like just since moving to New York, like all of the things that you've done and that you're doing, and your life has you've done a lot. In your amount of time in New York City. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited to hear about all of it. So
yes,
just to get started, maybe you're a pastor's kid. Mm-hmm. So maybe let's start there a little bit. Just kind of give us like, I know I read a little bit that you were part of, is it General Baptist Ministries? Is that where you grew up?
Yeah. So, my dad was part of the ministry, General Baptist ministry until I was in, I'm so sorry about my
girl. I got it.
My throat.
I got it.
I'm like, ugh. But yeah, no, we were in like kind of your typical Baptist background church. Like there was a baptismal, stained glass windows, like your traditional, like Easter pageant. I spent a lot of time in like an empty church, just like running around playing with the other pastor's kids. Right. And that was until like sixth grade. And then my dad, he's kind of a Renaissance man. So he took a break from the ministry and had like a normal person job for a hot second. And then when I got into high school, he got on staff at this like cool non-denominational church, you know, which is like just kind of code for we do what we want with a really nice sound system.
And we're also super charismatic.
And we're very, yeah. And like, I always say like, I grew up, so we were in that church from like, that was like the church I consider growing up in. Like, yes, I have memories of from like the traditional Baptist church. And like, I don't know if you remember the Stuart Allen Clark thing that came out. Like it was the pastor who were, yeah. So that's the church that
How
my dad was
forget?
The pastor at. I grew
Which
up-
for those who don't know is the guy who like went on and was like, women need to be hot for their husbands.
Yeah.
And like if they're not, you guys are doing it wrong.
Yeah, it's your fault like a, if he cheats on you.
It was like 2021 or something when he came out with it. Yeah,
it was basically just like a Trump rally. He was talking about Melania Trump. So that church is the church that...
Yeah, he compared wives to Melania Trump and he called them trophy wives.
Yeah.
Trophy wives. And it was just
Stanley
like...
Stanley Cup. Yeah. No, so it was cool. Yes. So many bad things. But that's my grandparents' church. And my dad was the pastor at that church. That was like the church he was at before we got to this cool church. So I like grew up in the like parsonage of that church until we left that area of Missouri. And then we joined a cool church. And then I grew up like more Hillsong United vibes, definitely that. So we had like a rock climbing wall and it was a gym and we played like upward basketball, you know, like, I don't know if you know that reference, but it was that kind of church. And so my parents really felt like they had found this like really amazing progressive church for us, right? Because we're coming from like Stuart Allen Clarkville. And so he was the community pastor at that church, which basically just means he organized all the small groups and then like made the church feel like a community instead of just a place that you show up to on Sundays, right? So he wasn't the guy at the pulpit, but he was still a big part of, you know, making the pieces move. And then, yeah, so I mean, my whole social life was at church. I was in like so many small groups. I had like a small group at my school, which was my two best friends. I had this small group with like the neighboring schools, which was actually quite a large group. And we would do stuff on weekends. And like, so it was my whole social life. And I I was in church like three times a week. And it was pretty much my entire identity. And it was not something my parents had to force me to do. It was something I really wanted to do. I really loved church. I really loved kind of being the purity princess with the purity ring. And like, that's what I was known for. And I didn't have a bad reputation and I didn't date because we're kissing, dating goodbye. And there's no dating and without intent to marry, you know, like I was fully in on that. And like, with also like, I was an athlete, I was a valedictorian. I was just like, honestly, from my parents' perspective, I'm like, I was a dream kid. Like, you didn't have to worry about anything with me. I was not rebellious at all. Like, I didn't want to be. And then I went to college and I was very much in it still, but I did go to school for theater. So naturally.
Did you go to college in New York?
No, in Missouri.
In Missouri. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. I'll just keep going and then we can go back to another
point. Yeah, just keep going. I just didn't know if you were just like, oh, I went to New York and went to school. And I was like, okay.
No. So basically I went to college for theater in Missouri, and that's when some questioning started to happen, but, I was still very much involved in it. Like I was in a missions group and traveled to Indonesia and lived in like, you know, fellowship focused housing and like the whole thing. I had a boyfriend who was definitely going to become my husband and then he didn't. And that's kind of when shit fell apart. I heard you say this in an episode, which was like, you got to a point where like, or maybe it was your other co-host, but you got to a point where it's like you were 25 and you realized you never thought about your life past 25 because you were going to get married at 22. And then you were going to have like an army of children. That's just what you were going to do. And then once you hit like, you know, your mid 20s and you don't have a husband or kids, like, shit, what is my identity? I don't even know who I am. So I went to college for theater, and then instead of marrying my college sweetheart, which I for sure thought I was going to do, we broke up late into my junior year. And I was like, oh, well, I guess I got to move to New York and pursue this dream of professional acting, which I always wanted to do. And I knew like from the first time I visited New York City, and I write about this in my book, I knew I was going to have this conflict, my love for New York and my soul's pull to like be an artist in the city and what, you know, I was called to do as a woman of God, which was to get married and do all of that. Right. So I was constantly in conflict with that. And then when my boyfriend and I broke up, I was like, well, I guess I'm going to New York, y'all. And so I did. So I moved to New York in 2013 and started pursuing musical theater professionally for the first like 5 years of my time in New York. And then I switched gears and was doing writing and on camera acting. So everything I've done pretty much since 2018 is on camera. Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
So that's my like church kid, pastor's kid sort of, and then landing me here.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Did you continue to go to college for musical theater or did you just pursue it in New York? I'm just curious.
Oh, this question. Yeah, no, I finished. Yeah, no. I finished my degree, a degree in musical theater, which actually, has turned out to be like, I feel like I learned so much with my theater degree, not about the business of acting. Hell no. But like about life in general. Like I look back on what I got in school and I'm like, wow, I feel like I got a much better education than a lot of people who majored in like accounting. So yeah, sure. I did. And I took some, like I went to a university, so I got some gen ed courses and I took some like biblical studies courses. And so a lot of that spurred a lot of questioning for me. So like, again, the questioning was starting and I had a lot of gay friends, right? Like, and I had friends who were saying to me,
you
have
to, you're in New York and you're doing musical theater.
Right. Exactly. Like, and I was like, man, these people, are like, you know, they're my compadres. Like, how can I say like they're going to hell? So that was the beginning of me really questioning the very, very beginning of me questioning, which is the sort of like impetus for the rich people in my life is when I was 14, I raised a whole bunch of money to go to a theater camp in upstate New York, which I now know because I work with billionaire kids. I now know that's a camp for like the 1%, that's where they send their offspring. I didn't know that. All I knew was it was a theater camp and I wanted to go to theater camp because we didn't really have theater at my high school. And so I raised the money to go, like literally washed cars in the Walmart parking lot, did like raffles, like dog walk, babysat, all the things when I was 14. And I went to this camp in upstate New York. And that was my first exposure to other theater kids who I felt quote unquote seen, and a lot of them gay, a lot of them Jewish. And the title of that chapter in my book is all caps, everyone is going to hell. And it was like this like fear, like, oh my God, all my friends are going to hell, you know? And then I would revisit that again in college.
Bad feeling.
Yeah. So it was kind of like undoing the whole, like, you know, some of the stuff, right? The slow undoing of, I don't know if I can believe everything my pastors say. Being being a theater kid, it just naturally there was questioning. But anyway, to answer your question, yes, I finished a 4-year degree and then I moved to New York.
Okay. Yeah. Gotcha. So you're in New York and you're pursuing musical theater, you have gay friends. And when did you kind of start, like, was it a slow kind of burn or was it kind of a downward spiral? Or was there, I mean, some people have like significant events that happen to them that make them just immediately go in the other direction. I don't really have one. Mine was sort of like a slow burn. And I don't have an exact moment that I was like, okay. But do you, or was yours sort of like just a slow unraveling over time?
Yeah. So I think it was slow in college, right? With like my experience with the missionary group was just like, ugh, like that is, you know, them making me feel like I wasn't Christian enough because I didn't want to give up my life and move to Indonesia or whatever. And like all of that, you know, and I was just kind of like, oh my gosh. And you guys suck, but like, also I feel so guilty. What do I not love God enough to want to do that? You know, all of that back and forth. Like I said, it had started, but then once I moved to New York, it was very involuntary. Like, I think this is something that a lot of people get wrong. Like people who are still Christian to people who have deconstructed is like, we just wanted to sin and we just want an excuse to live life under our own terms, on our own terms. So we just are, you know, dismissing the truth. And it's like, no, this was totally involuntary. I was accosted constantly just by living in New York City of all the ways I had been lied to. Just by living outside of the world where of a homogenous community, basically, right? Like you realize really quickly, like there's this story I always tell there, like I was talking to my Jewish roommate and I'm telling him about how I went on a date with a guy who was Jewish and how that really like rocked my world. It was like my first Tinder date in New York City and this guy is Jewish and I'm like having an equally yoked panic attack, right? I'm talking to my roommate about it and he's like, so it's really important for you that the person you're with to have the same like religious views as you. And I was like, I mean, yeah, like I couldn't, like I could never date someone who just fundamentally believes something so much different than me. Like I never date a Mormon. And he was like, right, right. Cause Mormons, they believe some crazy stuff. And I was like, well, do you know what they believe? And he was like, yeah. And he lists off all these things. And he's like, and I was like, yeah, it's freaking crazy. And he was like, no, no, I get it. He was like, I get it. Like, you know, virgins have babies all the time. Men walk on water all the time. Water to wine, super common. And I was like, are you making fun of me?
Wait.
And then he, yeah. And he goes, no, no, I get it. Like, Christians get miracles. Everyone else gets stuff they made up. And it was like, yeah. And it was moments
was like, bitch, we're waking you up.
Yes. And then he like told me about some books I should read. And he was like, enjoy enlightenment. And he's not wrong. Like, I really did from there. It was a fucking spiral. Like, I was like, oh, my God. And then just the way, you know, it's like you would tell someone I had just gone to worship service. And they're like, cool. So like hot yoga, like people just don't even they don't speak the same language, you know? And it's like,
right.
You know, I couldn't just show up on a date and like expect it to be like a testimony swap, you know? Like, how far ahead did you go with your last significant other, you know? Or like,
are you still a virgin?
Yes. And like, I remember having these conversations with these guys and then like, just the stuff that would come up, they'd be like, oh shit. So you like, I was like, cause I think I said something one time like, oh yeah, me and my college boyfriend, like, you know, we were supposed to get married. He was like, oh shit, you were engaged. And I was like, oh, well no. But, and he was like, then why were you supposed to get married? And I was like, well, because everybody gets married to their college sweetheart. And he was like, no, they don't, you know, just like stuff like that yeah. all the time was happening. And I was like, what? And so then like all of the lived experience I was having combined with like, I did go on a deep dive of like textual criticism, historical research of the Bible and all of that. And I do remember there was a moment after I had like, I was just, I don't know, just so exhausted. And I was looking out the window of my apartment over Broadway, so dramatic. And I just started crying. And I was like, I don't think Jesus is who they told me he was. And that realization, whether I like it or not, is going to change everything about my life. And that was really devastating. Because mm-hmm. suddenly these things that were easy, right? It's easy to attach your identity to your virginity status. It's easy to attach your identity to your religious affiliation. Once I had neither of those things or my marital status, right? Like I had lost all sense of who I was. And so it was very involuntary, but then between the research and then also like, once I realized I wasn't going to get married and I wasn't going to go on that godly path, like I just quickly realized there was no path for women like me in the church who were going to focus on their career, who were going to focus on what they wanted to do, but still wanted to be dating. I still wanted partnership, you know, I just,
right.
Maybe pursuing musical theater in your 20s in New York City is not the time to get married, you know? And,
no.
Maybe, just maybe. It was definitely, I wouldn't say it was abrupt, but it was certainly unexpected.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds like it was kind of, I mean, at least with your roommate story, a little bit of a rude awakening. Mm-hmm. Sort of like bringing you out of the clouds back down to earth.
Yeah. And, you know, and just realizing all the ways I had just a very Christian-centric worldview. Like I have this story mm-hmm. in my book too, where, you know, I'm just reveling in Christmas in New York and it's just so magical and whatever. And my roommate goes, Christmas is fucking oppressive. And I was like, do you really mean that? Like, you are such a Grinch right now. And he was like, and then he tells me this story about how he goes to Starbucks and they hand him a green and red cup with bows on it. And he looks at it and he turns back to the barista and goes, excuse me, can I have a big boy cup, please? He's like, And okay. It's just like, not everybody celebrates Christmas, but it is forced on all of us for like mm-hmm. three straight months, you know?
Amen. Because
he's Jewish, you know? Like, so, and I was like, wow, that's a really good point. Like, I'd never thought of it like that because I have a very mm-hmm. Christian-centric worldview, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah. And happy holidays is oppressing Christians. So we have to say yeah. Merry Christmas. Yeah.
Put the Christ back in yeah. Christmas. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Yeah. It's so interesting the path you go on when you do start deconstructing and you do start opening your mind a little bit that mm-hmm. you're like, wow, there are so many other people in the world with so many different backgrounds and so many different religions and so many different growing up experiences. And I've just grown up in my little bubble this whole time. And it's a lot to take in.
Yes.
But yeah, you can't not. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say my other two roommates were from, one was like born and raised in New York and India. And so she had like no context for what I was talking about. And then the other roommate was raised in Sweden, super agnostic, also had no idea, like no context, right? So just in my apartment alone, there was more diversity than like all of Missouri. So
yeah, well, yeah, that makes sense though. mm-hmm. It's Missouri.
Yeah.
okay. Well, I wouldn't mind going into Cameron. Do you have any questions?
I was just going to say, as I'm sure, like as surreal and what's the word I'm looking for? As, I don't know, abrupt and just like catastrophic your realizations were throughout this entire journey. Like just listening to this with the kind of absurdity that you went through and with you being a theater kid, like you could almost write a movie about this. Like
I was literally thinking that. I was like, this would be such a good movie.
You guys, that's the plan. No, that's the plan.
Like
I
want to
turn it into
a
TV show. Yeah. Cause I have the pilot for the show, right? Okay. I did the pilot for the show, but then I spent the last 2 years finishing up writing my book and everything. So I haven't been able to revisit the show, but trust me, it's in the works.
Just girl, it's gotta happen because it reminds me of so many The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, and
yes.
Like those were the vibes I was getting. Where like there's her who's so sheltered, and there's like Titus who's like,
yes,
honey. there was a couple other shows that came to mind too, but it's just like this. I mean, I feel like shows based in New York City with like quirky roommates and like crazy different backgrounds, even like the mm-hmm. show Girls on HBO, like it's so perfect, and you have some great stories.
That's kind of how I describe my show is I want it to be like the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt meets Girls. Because again, the icing on the cake of all of this is the setting of this whole story is through an insane series of events. Read the book, find out. I'm also living in a penthouse apartment with like of this super rich, ritzy building. And so I live in this building that I would never be able to afford on my own because my roommate, the one who like is making fun of me all the time, his dad used to own the entire building. And when his dad sold the building, he got to keep the penthouse as long as like one of his kids lives in it. So I lived for very inexpensively in this penthouse apartment on the Upper West Side. And so on top of having all of these like deconstruction situations, I'm having this immense culture shock of just living with and working for the 1%. Cause I'm also an actor, right? So I'm like babysitting for billionaires, which I still do. My day to day is insane, y'all. And so it was just a lot getting thrown at me. And it will make a fantastic TV show.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm excited.
I'd watch that.
I'd watch that. Okay, so what led you to start your blog, I guess? Mm. Is that's how it started, right?
Yeah.
It started as a blog.
Yeah, God, Sex, and Rich People, yeah. Mm-hmm. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, just what kind of led you there? I don't, if that's the way we'd like to move into, and I'll just stop you if I have questions, but yeah.
Yeah, so marriage equality passed in 2015, I believe, 2014 or 2015. And that's when the very first blog post I released was called God and the Gays. And I never considered myself a writer at all. I mean, I've been keeping a journal since I was like in second grade, which is kind of insane, but I didn't consider myself a writer. But I thought, you know what, I'm going through all of this and, you know, I would like to share some of my thoughts on all of it, right? So this is like 2014, 2015, I think it was 2014. I'll have to double check that date. So I released a blog post about how meeting and having gay friends was the impetus for me questioning my faith. And it was definitely like commentary on 2015. Great. It was definitely commentary on the church and on evangelicalism and on purity culture as it was happening to me. You know, obviously how it affects so much and just kind of the beginning of me sharing was when marriage equality passed. And then from there, I just kept writing blog posts. They started as just like really long-winded stories of things that I just thought were really interesting. I was like, I'm so cool. These hot actors in New York City are trying to fuck me. And like, I'm going to tell everybody about it. And like, you know, and so that's kind of how it started. I sort of wanted to like, I thought I was really cool and wanted to like show everybody back home who was getting married with their dumb dry weddings, how cool I was.
Like, dry weddings are so dumb.
I listened to your episode about the weddings recently too. And I was like, oh my God, relatable content. But then secretly underneath it all, right, I felt totally invaluable and like I had no value because I wasn't getting married. So, mm-hmm. You know, it was kind of a mix of things. It was like, I want to show off, but secretly I'm just like trying to mask my insecurities, but also I want to share with people what I'm going through and what I'm discovering and realizing how much of this is not God or Jesus. It's all just social control. And, so that was the beginning and I started writing that and then 2016 happened. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, the term evangelical was a household term. Like suddenly everybody knew about, you know, what was surprising to everyone else, especially like the liberal elite, they were like, we don't get it. Why do Christians like Donald Trump? He's like the most not Christian person. I'm like, this is not surprising to me. I have been talking about this, you know, like, and same with my parents. Like my parents were so just like appalled at how quickly their friends and family were willing to follow this guy. And I was like, I am not surprised. Have you not been reading my blog? You know,
like I saw this coming. Yeah. Everyone, I saw it coming.
I've been saying. And then I just, the blog really just was a chance for me to have a creative outlet and connect with people. And what happened was, I mean, a lot of these stories I was really scared to share. Because I started sharing more about like my experiences dating in New York City and everything and what I was coming up against in the nuance of purity culture and how it was affecting me in, you know, secular dating. And they were very, very vulnerable stories to share. But people just kept coming in droves being like, oh my God, me too, me too, me too. Before deconstruction was a movement, before purity culture was a term, like I was writing these stories and people were saying me too, me too, me too. But there was not like a whole, like I said, like a movement around it at that time.
Yeah. We didn't have like vocabulary for it.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was really like healing, I think, for me to be able to talk about it in that way. And to share community with people around it too.
So what you're saying is you started the movement.
I started it
single-handedly.
Let's go.
And I am still so pissed that I'm just now getting a book out.
Just like, no, where's my credit?
I do think that, not that I started the movement, but I do think I'm like, you know, I wish I would have, I just never like popped off, you know, like the people who've like gone viral, who are now like the big hitters in the evangelical movement. Mm-hmm. Like that was never me. I was always like doing my acting thing, auditioning. And then also I have this blog and then it just evolved, to, you know, now I do have a book. Now I do have a series I'm developing, but Yeah, I was talking about it before people were talking about it.
So you were simultaneously ahead of the game and now late to the game.
Yes,
and now
it
behind.
It's infuriating. Yeah. Yes, it's true.
I also think it's like a with the algorithm and what really goes viral and what people mm-hmm. want is so. I feel like. Because I felt this way too. I feel like we're doing the more, like, I don't want to say the harder work, mm-hmm. but we are. Like, we're not necessarily, like, I don't know. It's more like behind the scenes. We're like facilitating places for people to come mm-hmm. and talk about things and share their experiences. And I think that just isn't as popular as doing skits or going off and just being like, here's my hot take.
Yeah.
And I also just don't have the energy or the time to get on every single day or just continually immerse myself in the evangelical culture because it's exhausting and I don't want to be a part of it anymore. And so mm-hmm. I feel like there's a lot of things that attribute to that, but
I can relate. I can relate to all of that. We don't have to go down a rabbit hole of like content creation, but I definitely like my friends who did like pop off. They comment on like every time, whatever yeah. the fuck Driscoll says something, they have something mm-hmm. to say about it. And I'm like,
it's like a chain reaction.
Yeah. Like I work full time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I work full time. I'm filming auditions. I'm just like putting my energy into other things. Mm-hmm. And like, I don't know. It just was never, I'd rather write a meaningful blog that like 400 people read than like yeah. something that is just like a quick hit that like millions of people see, you know? So it's just not the mm-hmm. full story. This is more like long form, I think is really what
yeah.
it comes down to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Trust me. You do have to be built for the short form content thing. Like it's mm-hmm. a whole different animal. And if you're not ready for it, it's exhausting and it just drains every ounce of life out of you. So I totally understand.
Yeah. 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 Totally.
Yeah. Okay. So how was dating then? Being this, good Christian girl.
Yeah.
Come to New York City, getting a rude awakening from your roommate. Yeah. Realizing that you're not going to get married, but you still want to date people, but you're dating men in New York City. So,
oh my God.
I can't imagine that was a culture shock in itself from dating good Christian boys in Missouri. What was that yeah. like? Was
well, that they weren't cumming their pants. We'll just put it that way. They were not dry humping me.
God, it feels so juvenile to say that. It's like, like, are you like 13 and 14 and just like realize you can get an erection? Like,
it is yes. though, but that's a big thing in purity culture, right? Like, I was just, a woman wrote a book and she wanted me to do some like revisions, feedback on her chapters. And I like pointed out to her in one of them, I was like, do you realize like this is a full blown story of like how purity culture really fucks with your sexual maturation? And like, you guys are in your late 20s acting like 14 year olds. Like, and it yeah. is so cringe. It's so cringe. Anyway,
it's,
yes.
It's the ick.
It is the ick. How was dating? So, like I mentioned earlier, it was a rude awakening because I was like, wait, so we're not just like swapping testimonies at a coffee shop? That's weird. And I didn't know what to talk about on dates because that's what you talked about back in Missouri is your faith and what were your previous relations?
I'm so in love with the Lord. How about you?
Yeah.
I love God more than you.
Let's yeah, exactly. Can you lead me spiritually? And the thing is like, I really thought, like I used to tell people, I can't wait to move to New York so I can just finally be in a place where I can like meet my husband. Cause I know I'm going to be there for like 10 years at least. Right. Like, so I just want to feel grounded and at home. And then I can like meet my person. I would tell people that as if I was going to move to New York City in my early 20s and like meet a husband, because I genuinely thought where there are single men, there are men who want to get married. Turns out that is not the case, especially nope. men in their early 20s in New York City, who many of them are making so much money right out of school, right? These kids are like leaving whatever college and then coming directly to the financial district and making like starting out 100K. And so they're just like, you know, frat boys, but like with mm-hmm. rent to pay now. And so none of them were interested in a relationship. And the ones that were kind of weird. And there was kind of a reason where they wanted to like lock something down, which sounds really mean, but it was kind of like homeschool vibes, you know? Mm-hmm. And so any of the ones that were like normal, if you will, none of them were trying to get married. And I was like, this is, so that was the first chunk of my dating experience in New York, is just like, no one was trying to get married. And that was real disappointing to me. And I was having sex. So I did a whole story of like how I lost my virginity or had my sexual debut. And it is a mess. It was such a mess. But, I did end up having sex with the guy who was basically a stranger. This man has gone on to win like Grammys. So we just call him pop singer.
Do you just be like, I tap out? Yeah.
I'm like, we don't have to talk about it, but yeah. No, I remember one time I was in H&M, like trying on a swimsuit, and I heard his voice, and I like peeked my head out to my friends, and I was like, you guys, I fucked this guy. They were like, you are so weird. Why are you saying like,
no, that sounds like something I might do too.
Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, exactly. Cause like I shazammed it. Yeah, I shazammed it. I was like, I knew it. It's him. So anyway, but basically a stranger, which is, you know, in hindsight, also just like a stupid result of purity culture, because I would have much rather had sex with the guy I had built a relationship with for 3 years. Trust, mm-hmm. love, right? But instead I had sex for the first time with someone who didn't give a shit about me, and I didn't give a shit about him. So that was sort of the, like, I realized like in that one incident, how much of the sex education, if you can call it that I had gotten was like just total BS. Because I didn't feel like a different person. I didn't feel forever changed. It wasn't good. Like,
did you feel like he took a piece of you with him?
I didn't even bleed. Like, what is this mess? You know, that they were telling us. Isn't that a
shocker? You're like, yeah. Oh, no.
Yeah. Like, oh, did I do it wrong? You know, whatever. And then like right after he like gave my number to the drummer of his band, like was like handing me off like a fucking track baton.
Gross.
Yeah, it was bad. And I was like, is this how like normal people sex goes outside the church? This is not how I thought it was gonna happen, you know? And then doing all the dance of like, oh, well, it was so bad because I didn't wait and I had sex outside of marriage, and dealing with all of these demons. So I was this really interesting mix in my first, like, I would say 3 to 4 years of dating in New York City, of like trying to look and seem as normal as possible, but on the inside, just like battling demons constantly. There's a line in the book where I'm like, oh, once I realized like my virginity status wasn't going to win any guys over, like my lack of having sex wasn't going to like be appealing, I said, fuck it all. And then I quite literally fucked it all. Like, I had so much sex that I can't remember, that if I do remember it, it wasn't good. Most of the time it was like one and done. I didn't have sex more than once with most guys that I slept with. A lot of times I was drunk for it, which I think is really problematic and doesn't get talked about enough. Just not mm-hmm. being like fully alert for sex because we're so afraid of intimacy. And then other times I was just completely dissociating. Like, I know I was there, but I don't remember anything about it. And I didn't know that I was dissociating until I got into sexual trauma therapy years later. But yeah, so I'm pretty candid about the fact that like the sex I was having in those first like 4 years was not good. And then the one guy that I did have sex with really consistently was such a righteous fuckboy that I allowed myself to participate in it, right? But I think, again, he was a product of purity culture, which is like, well, rather than have like a bunch of notches on my bedpost and increasing my number, let me just like keep having sex with this guy who treats me like shit, because at least it's the same guy, so I'm sleeping with fewer guys if I just sleep with him. And yeah, so it was not great.
Sounds really healthy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It wasn't until I had sort of a come to Jesus moment, I guess, for lack of a better term. And when was I? I was like 20, 25, 26. And basically I discovered through conversation with a friend and having like a total meltdown about how horrible things were going in my life. Like I didn't feel like a successful actor. I felt like total sham. And like also my dating and sex life was awful. And I had this like ongoing relationship situationship with this fuckboy who treated me like shit. And just like, God, why is all of this happening to me? Meanwhile, right? Like what I think is it's happening to me because I am being punished because I have chosen a non-godly lifestyle. And look, it's true what they say. Life sucks if you don't follow the Lord. And like I was living out that narrative. And it wasn't until I discovered like Pema Chodron. Like the Four Agreements and Jin Sincero and all sorts of self-help that I actually learned about, like, oh, you can reconstruct your neuro pathways. Like this is happening in my life because I believe these things. So I just have to actually reconfigure my beliefs. So there was like this big gap between when I did all the deconstruction and then when I actually did reconstruction. And I call those years like my rubble years. Like I had knocked everything down, but I had no idea what to do with it. So it wasn't until I started like rebuilding my belief in myself and telling myself different things that, and sort of deciding like, you know, I call it like my panty entry policy and like, which is a sexual ethic, right? Or like a blueprint for boning, what actually makes good sex, you know, like actually being intentional about these things and then how to look for that in men, how to suss out a misogynistic daywalker on a date. Like, cause sometimes they get past you. You can't always catch it right away. Right. Like I had to like learn these things and be more intentional about them. But that didn't come until like, honestly, after, which I'm sure we're going to get to, after I was raped. And then that kind of like woke some stuff up for me. A lot of things. Sorry to drop that right in there, but that's the timeline, right? Like it was around like 2016 and then a lot changed for me.
Yeah. I think it's inevitable to come out of purity culture, have no roadmap, date, have sex, and then ultimately have a experience around where things were not consensual and ultimately assault, because I just don't think, I think it's hard to know any better, and it's hard to know when to get out. It's hard to know when things are off, when, you know, and it's just, which it sucks that it takes an experience like that to, you know, and it doesn't always to get, you know, sexual help and things like that. But it's, this is what I hate about purity culture, is like, they don't do us any favors. And, you know, I don't even know what you were doing as far as like protection, and STDs and stuff, because I didn't do shit. And it's like, I made it out somehow without, you know, anything. And, it's just, it leads to anger and stuff too, because it's like, okay, the people who are supposed to set me up for the world, like totally failed me in so many ways.
Yeah.
And obviously abstinence only does not work. And it doesn't teach you anything about, and like women's pleasure. We don't even talk about that in purity culture.
Right.
Forget about that. If you feel comfortable, you can tell us as much about that experience if you want, because I would like to move into Planned Parenthood's mental health counseling program a little bit, just to discuss some other benefits of Planned Parenthood too, besides abortions.
What people hear on the news.
In case, you know, anyone's listening and they, I mean, cause that's all we're taught. That's all I thought Planned Parenthood was.
Totally. That's the blog post. I wrote a blog post called The Abortion Place, and it's all about my experience at Planned Parenthood. Yeah.
Yeah, like where you think everyone going into Planned Parenthood is getting an abortion.
Until you go.
Just screaming at you.
Yeah, it's like why, you know, it's what you think about people who are not Christians until you become one of those people. And then you're getting like a VR experience of like yeah. what you were told, right? And you're like, oh, fuck, no, I'm just one of those people, right? And there, mm-hmm. yeah, there's a lot there. Yeah, so basically I started in early 2016, really like rebuilding my sense of self, like, you know, reading the self-help books, like whatever, doing it all. And then I ended up, you know, it worked. I liked myself more. So things started going better. And I booked a 4-month contract in the White Mountains of New Hampshire, which was a really great chance for me to just like fully get away and kind of reset. You know, I got my diet right. I started exercising. I made a vision board. I finished the Harry Potter series. Like I was doing some cool shit, you know, reclaiming my time as a church yep. kid.
Reclaiming your childhood. Be like, I will read Harry Potter. Thank
yes.
you.
Yes. The Cursed Child came out that year and it was like a big thing. And I was like, I gotta finish the books. Anyway, and then I actually ended up meeting a guy who we fell in love and we had an amazing relationship. But he was only in the States temporarily because he was here on a J-1 visa. So I say all of this to say, like, actually, when I was raped, I was in a really good place. I was like, oh, things are really amazing. Like I just had a sense of clarity about my life that I was definitely mm-hmm. lacking before. And so then like my boyfriend moves back to Romania and we have like amicably separated and we're, you know, we're still like, you know, in touch. He's an amazing person. This is the abbreviated version of the story. And then I get back to New York and within like, you know, a couple of weeks, I'm out with a girlfriend at a bar. This guy approaches me, asks me out. You know, I know the type. We're in Murray Hill. He's in a nice suit, like, but he's handsome and like interesting, whatever. So I say yes. And then we go out and I did have a really good time with him. And then he asks me out again. And it's right after Donald Trump was elected. And we're both, he's like super liberal. He works for the UN. He's a UN diplomat. And just so much there, right? Like I did the Women's March and all of that. And then I go out with this guy and we have a really great time together again. And he invites me back to his apartment. And I say, because I have developed a sense of clarity and, you know, self, and I say, I'm having a really good time with you. I would love to spend more time with you tonight, but I know the implications of going back to your apartment and I am not going to fulfill those expectations. I don't want to have sex. I don't want to have sex with someone I'm not in a committed relationship with. Like, couldn't have been clearer, you know?
Just laid it out.
And mm-hmm. laid it out there. And for me, that took a lot of work because, right, we are so conditioned to not hurt the guy's feelings, to not, mm-hmm. you know, to take care of them and at all costs be liked by men, right? Like at all costs. Yeah,
people pleasing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I was really learning to like, no, my no is important. Now this is pre-Me Too, you guys. This is all of this that has come out since. Consent, all of that, not talked about yet, like in pop culture and on the news. Mm-hmm. He'd just gotten elected. So I say all this and he's like, oh, of course not. We go back to his apartment. He pours me a nightcap. I take like one sip and I'm like, I cannot drink any more of this. Like I need to go home. Like it's late. I have to babysit in the morning, you know, and I'm saying all of this to him and he's like, no, stay. I want you to stay. And then I'm looking at the time and we had been drinking. So I was like very tired, you know, and I'm looking mm-hmm. at the time and I'm thinking in my head, fuck, that's going to be an expensive Uber back home. Cause I live all the way in Harlem at the time. And, so I just think to myself, you know, not that I have to defend, but drinking and think like, no, I'll just sleep here and take the train in the morning, save myself the $50, you know? And so I tell him like, no, I will stay, but I'm going to stay on the couch. I'm going to stay on the couch. I don't want to come into bed. Like I'm going to stay on the couch. I don't want to, you know, like just really, I know that
Very clear boundaries is what you're getting.
Did not want to sleep with him. Yeah. And then he stays out on the couch with me. And we're kissing and we're making out. And again, like, I'm attracted to the guy. Like, this is where the shit gets really, like, it's blurry, but it's not blurry, right? Like, I was attracted to him. We were kissing. We were fooling around, but I didn't want to have sex with him. And then I remember just, like, passing out, being like, I cannot keep my eyes open. Like, I have to fall asleep right now. And so I do. I'm like, I'm just going to go to sleep. And then I wake up to him touching me, and then he's inside of me. Obviously no condom, you know. And then I'm just like, oh, what's happening? You know, like, it's just so, we don't have to go into details there. But then the next morning he sees me out and says something like, I can't wait to see you again or something. And I'm like, what? Like, and there's so much happening as I'm leaving that, because I'm like, I'm saying all of the things that I'm afraid everybody else is going to say to me, which is like, why did you go home with him? Why did you fool around with him? Why did you make out with him? Why were you drinking? You know, because aside from like sitting in your apartment alone and like getting broken in and then brutally raped, like everything's going to be our fault. Right. Yeah. Like we, that's what, and I had to go to babysit that day, and I just knew that I was really afraid of getting an STD because he didn't use a condom and we hadn't talked about any of that. So I called Planned Parenthood and I told them what happened. And I said, so I need to get tested right away because I don't know this guy. And they said, okay, well, nothing's going to show up for at least another 2 to 3 weeks. So testing you right now wouldn't really be beneficial, but we're going to link you with a counselor. So they have this counselor call me back and they are like, so if you can get to Mount Sinai in the next 48 hours, we will set you up with a social worker and a doctor, and they will walk you through everything. We'll get you all the preventative medicine. We will get you a rape kit if you want that. We will document everything, and we will also set you up with a sexual trauma therapist. And I was like, for free? Because I'm on like Medicaid, you know? Right. And they're like, yep, for free. Like, we have affiliate programs we work with, but you have to get there within 48 hours. That's really important for the rape kit and for all, you know? So I asked off work. And I had my very first gay friend in theater. He is the one who sat with me in that room. And, you know, it was just one of those beautiful moments of like, these people that I had been told were awful, gay people, Planned Parenthood, they were the ones saving me. And I mean, though, that social worker took me back. She walked me through everything. They gave me HIV testing, up to like follow-up up to 8 months. So I had visits set up. We scheduled them right there. And all the prep, all the medicine, right. Which was really hard on my system. I remember getting really sick and they told me that was going to happen. And then they said, and you have sexual trauma therapy free of charge for as long as you need it. And wow. I was like, are you serious? And again, at the time, I didn't want it to be real. I didn't want this thing that had happened to me. Because if you call it rape, then you have to deal with it like rape. And I just wanted it to be this like isolated event that happened. And then I'm going to move on with my life because you don't get to rob me of my happiness. I didn't give you permission to do that. You know, that was how I felt. And so I felt like I was just going to go back to my life. I'll just be able to like flirt with anyone. I'll be, you know, and then about, I don't know, 4 or 5 months later, I found myself like crying under my covers and I just couldn't get out of bed. I just felt totally debilitated. And I called my brother and I was like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what's wrong with me. And he was like, did you ever go see the therapist? Cause I did tell my brother about it. In terms of my family, he was the first one to know. And, I said I didn't, because back then therapy wasn't cool yet. You know, like it was like, oh, if you go to therapy, you have a problem. And I didn't mm-hmm. want it to be a problem. But then I did. I finally went and I met the therapist that I still work with to this day. He was free then. He is not free now.
He charges me now.
He charges me now. But that's because he was working for a nonprofit at the time, you know. Mm-hmm. And he is such an incredible therapist. I recommend him to everyone. I mean, like 8 of my friends, my sister sees him. We all share him as a therapist because he is just, he absolutely changed my life. And that's all from like one call to Planned Parenthood.
Yeah,
and that's incredible. People think it's just an abortion place. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, also, I felt like goosebumps too when you were saying that, like, the people that I like was told that were like bad and going to hell, and I was supposed to hate like Planned Parenthood and gay people, like, they were the ones who like totally like sat with you, pulled you in, and were like, here's some resources, we're going to help you. And like, if you had gone to like the church, they would have totally said it was your fault.
Yeah.
They would have, you know, like just the reactions are completely different. I'm like, which one is more loving? Which one is more like Christ-like, if you will, in regards to it's supposed to be about love. And it's just like, yeah, that's, I mean, that's impactful, I think. Mm-hmm. And it's horrible that that is like something that you had to go through. But I also think that it's an incredible story as well for you to share.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I'm so grateful. Like, yeah, it came at such a high cost, but like, until I got into sexual trauma therapy, I did not realize to the extent that purity culture was still just like fucking me. Ironically,
she's a sneaky little bitch.
She is in the like smallest. I just wrote, I actually was in a writing cohort with Karen from Deconversion Therapy. Mm-hmm. And I shared this piece at that event about riding on the train. And anyways, I can send it to you, but basically like I was trying to be like polite to this man and he ends up like on the train, he ends up like assaulting me. And I talked about that in therapy about like, I was just trying to be nice. I was just like, I was trying to be friendly. Like, and Patrick, my therapist was like, why do you feel like you have to be nice to strangers? And even that, I was like, yeah, why do I feel like I have to be nice mm-hmm. to strangers? And like undoing that and realizing, realizing in my dating life, how often I prioritized men's feelings over my own. Like I would literally date guys for like months at a time who I was not interested in because I was too afraid to hurt their feelings. Right. Mm. I was too afraid to like, I don't want them to like their feelings to be hurt, whatever. And yeah. And just having to reframe a lot of that. And then, yeah, learning like what to look for and what kind of naming for myself, what kind of sexual experiences I really want to have and with what kind of people. And then, yeah, it was very helpful, to just unpack the nuance because I don't think we realize to the extent without, you know, someone helping us. Yeah. So I'm very, mm-hmm. I am forever grateful. That's why I say Planned Parenthood saved my life because until Patrick, I had books, I had guidance, but like in meeting him was the game changer. And it's sad to me because even still when I talk to women who are victims or who, are survivors, I'd rather say, or just, you know, are working through the purity culture stuff. They want therapy. They want, but it's like so inaccessible. It's expensive, mm-hmm. you know? And so like, I want people to know if something like this happened to you, you can call Planned Parenthood. You might not get as lucky to have the therapist then that you'll have for the rest of your life, but you will get some help. And they do offer those services. And I went to Planned Parenthood for all of my women's health needs for like the last 8 years. It's only in the last 2 years that I've actually gone to like a gynecologist because they have great services. And I know when I walk in, I'm not going to leave with a huge bill, you know,
right.
Like, and you need that. You need that burden to be taken off. That's why people don't go to the doctor because they're afraid of the price tag. So anyway.
Yeah. Right. That's why people don't get care. And yeah. Honestly, like I wonder if you would have, because you had done so much work on yourself and because you were in more of a moment of clarity and boundaries and things like that. I wonder if that is, you still took care of yourself in that state of shock and that state of trauma because you called someone to ask for help. And I wonder if like, if you hadn't done that work on yourself, if you hadn't, you know, if you had been in a different place, if you would have just not, you know what I mean? Called someone, if you would have not advocated for yourself, because that is you advocating for yourself. You're like, this happened to me. I know this happened to me. And you ask for help. Whereas like, I think in a different headspace, it would be like, okay, well, if I don't talk about it, it didn't happen. And I'm just gonna, you know, not advocate for myself and not do anything about this. So
yeah,
even though it almost is like, well, like maybe that shouldn't have happened to me because I was in a good space. It's like, no, I think that that was a better time for it to happen to you. You know, it shouldn't have happened to you at all, but it's like, right. If because you were in more of a headspace to advocate for yourself and do something about it and help yourself,
right.
I guess.
And I do feel fortunate that, again, sucks, horrible, but I do feel lucky that it happened right around when all of this stuff with Donald Trump was coming out, because the, like my community, my family was in a better place to listen. Had I told them that story 2 years prior, even, they probably would have made it my fault. But because I didn't tell anyone my story until after Me Too, I think people were just more available, I thought like after it happened, I was like, oh, I will never tell anyone this story. Absolutely not.
Sure.
Like, because I didn't want to like platform something horrible, you know, I didn't want to like use it as like, this happened to me. And then I also just didn't want to admit that it happened because I was feeling all of those feelings of like blaming myself of like, oh, this happened because I'm a slut. And because I didn't save myself until marriage, right? As if only women who have sex before marriage, this stuff happens to, you know? And then as things unfolded, it was like, I started to realize, you know, things like how I believed that the reason men were not interested in me anymore after we had sex was because we had sex. And it's like, okay, well, let's unpack that a little bit. Like, he is grossed out by you, who he chose to have sex with. Like, what does that say about him? And then also, why does he view you doing something as bad when he participated in the exact same act? But also, maybe it's not the fact that you had sex too soon and that's why he's lost interest. Maybe he just was never interested to begin with, but you had sex with him before you really knew the level of his interest. Like, we were not given the skills to critically think through these things. So everything just becomes about our sexual value and what we're offering or not offering.
And once they get it, they're done with you. That is like literally the only narrative that I heard about men, which also kind of dehumanizes men as well.
Because then you think,
oh, well, this man just like walks around wanting sex from women. And once he gets it, he's like, ah, now I'm good. And then like moves on to the next one. And it's like, that's not what men are like at all.
Yeah. I mean, and it,
yes, some men are fuckboys and they suck. But in general,
but they're usually a little more suave than that, at least.
Yeah, they are. They're not like cavemen about it, but it's just these ridiculous purity culture narratives too, that like we have this bizarre thinking about men and sex in general. And I do think purity culture like perpetuates rape culture as well, because we don't talk about consent. Men, you know, aren't really told anything about sex except that they can't help it, you know, and it's just a whole
cycle that I'm like, and they view us as sex objects because they are taught that we are sex objects and that we don't enjoy sex and that we don't get a say in sex and it's our duty. And it's just like, do you not see how all of that is going to connect and just create, you know, instances where consent is blurred and rape happens or, you know, sexual assault or anything like that, that shouldn't have happened if you didn't push this narrative on young people?
Yeah. Well, I mean, in purity culture, I say this too, is like men are constantly talked about as if they are like they are predators, but then they're, but in the way, like they're using predatory language, but then like putting them on a pedestal. Like, no, the way that you're talking as if they are predators, like they are just like fucking rogue when their dick is erect. Like that's what, you know, like it's just, that's not even, and then like you're saying they learn and that you're responsible
for making their dick erect.
No matter what. And
no again, matter what, and, what were you wearing?
Yeah. Which clavicle was exposed? Like, ugh. I just, yeah. I think that too, it made me really afraid of men. And again, which gets also really confusing because it's like, it made me afraid of men, but then it's reinforced by my experience. But then I want to live in a world where I am not afraid of men and I want to see them as fully human because I want to better the world. So I was, I'm like always in this back and forth of like the world that I live in, the world I want to live in, the person I want to be, the people I want to interact with, but then also like the realities of things kind of like ping ponging back and forth, if that makes any sense. So it is really messy and it's really hard work. And I think if anyone comes out of this world and just thinks like, I don't know, like the stuff when people are like, well, sounds like you just wanted to have sex and not feel guilty about it. I'm like, that is so reductive. Like, what are you talking about? I had lots of sex and still felt really guilty about it. Like, you know,
you're like,
you
maybe I don't want to feel guilty about it. Actually, maybe you're not wrong.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, why is that so bad? First of all, but also like, that's so not, and you have to do so much work to get there, you know? And I always say like the work of undoing yourself from evangelicalism or purity culture, I can't speak for men, but definitely for women, is just the work of like integration and full embodiment, because we are just constantly severed from ourselves and taught to fear ourselves. And if you can just learn that all parts of you are good and like bring it all together, like you'll be more in your power, which is what they don't want, right? Because it's all about control.
Yeah, I think they're very much afraid of feminine sexual energy. It's terrifying.
Yes. Powerful. Yeah. Cameron, any thoughts?
Cameron, as a man.
I'm just grateful. I'm just grateful Cameron's to be in the room right now.
Good answer. No, I'm just kidding.
Yes.
Sit my ass down and listen. I was not brought up in purity culture by a long shot, so I can't even provide the male perspective on the purity culture side of things, so
you didn't have like a group circles where you talked about how many times you masturbated that week.
No. That is Cameron, that's what it was. For girls, it was like us talking about our crushes, and for boys it was like, how many times did you jerk off this week?
And have you repented?
And have you repented?
My one of my best friend's girlfriends was just telling me this story of how she got caught masturbating or something when she was 16, and they brought her into the office with all the elders and everything, and made her explain everything that like how she, why she even started, what she was thinking about. And like, while she was sitting in the room, she realized, oh my God, you motherfuckers are getting off to this. And she like lost her mind.
Yeah, I was gonna say, that's so gross.
Yeah. So these stories are the more I hear about this stuff, it makes my blood boil. So
that's no, and that's the thing, is like if you tell people outside of purity culture like about this stuff, they're like, that was one of the best gifts that New York gave me, is like so many people who didn't grow up in it. So then when I would talk about it, they'd be like, that's really fucked up. And I'd be like,
you're like, is it?
Oh. Yeah. Is it? Yeah.
It like, is, isn't it?
And that's another
really
thing,
weird.
Yeah. Another thing with dating, I'll say really quick, I know we're running long, but like one thing I really grew to appreciate is people had like no context for how I was raised. And I think I hear from a lot of people from purity culture that they really want someone who like gets it. And I was like, no, the further away from it, the better. Like I had a guy one time introduce me to someone and be like, yeah, she was raised evangelical. And I was like, that is the kind of religious ignorance I need in my life. I'm not even going to correct him.
Evangelical?
I'm thinking of a pelican like, as a mascot now. Yeah. Fuck I'm also the stork, thinking of like Anglican.
Yes, that's exactly. So that's what he was probably thinking of. But I still was just like, you know what? He doesn't know, and I like it that way. So I'm not going to correct him. Yes.
Yeah, it is a whole nother language and a whole nother mm-hmm. culture. Mm-hmm. It really is a whole culture. And
it is.
Count yourself blessed if you were.
Man, those fun rock walls and stained glass windows are a fucking psyop to get you invested in the church. I swear to God.
Yes. Don't sign your kids up for Upward Basketball. It's a trap.
It's a trap. It's all a trap.
Yeah.
Run away.
It's a really good economic option for basketball leagues, but it is one-way ticket to heaven motives. Or hell. Yes.
Yes. Well, in our last little time that we have, I would mm-hmm. love for you to tell us a little bit about like, well, I know you told us about your book a little bit, but I'd like to broadcast that a little bit. Yeah. If you could just let us know when it's coming out. I know I said the date, but is there like a pre-order or are you going to be like going on book tours or I know you said, or I said this in the bio, you didn't say this, but you said that there's a pilot and I know that mm-hmm. premiered at an Omaha Film Festival in 2023. Mm-hmm. Is there a place people can go watch that?
Sure. Or is that- yeah. So for my book, it's coming out September 10th, 2024, which is very exciting.
Better
lots
soon.
Of podcast interviews, lots of Instagram lives coming up. So we're not doing pre-order, but the best thing you can do is just order it on the day of. So basically, the way we're doing it is we're just going to flood Amazon with purchases so that it ups my like bestseller likelihood. Mm-hmm. Right. And so that's the like mark your calendar September 10th. It goes live. If you are interested in being part of my launch team, you would get an advanced manuscript and then you would, you know, have a chance to like write a little blurb about it. But then you just agree to also buying the book on launch day and reviewing it. And then I would send you like, you know, the graphics to share on social media and whatnot. So if you're interested in that, you can DM me on Instagram. So the way to follow along with all of this is me at Instagram, at Mattie Jo Cowsert. So MattieJoCowsert. And then just follow me there. And then everything, my blog, it's all in my link tree. But that's really where everything is happening right now. I do also have a Facebook page, a God, Sex, and Rich People Facebook page that you can follow along on, but because there's lots of crossover, but Instagram is really just like the easiest. And then, yeah. And then you can, subscribe to my blog, which again is in my link tree, but it also MattieJoCowsert.com. You can subscribe there. And that will be where like all the announcements are and any blog releases and any PR that comes out in the meantime is there. But again, September 10th is the date. Mark your calendar and just buy the book then. And I am doing a launch event. We just don't know exactly what it's going to be yet, but we're going to try to do some sort of like panel and get some like other purity culture, ex-evangelical experts on the panel, and it'll be in New York City, and we're going to try to live stream it. And I have not premiered my pilot publicly because it was going through all of the festivals, and mm-hmm. I was kind of like waiting to see because they all of them have like rules about that. So we're finally through all of that, and I am going to premiere it publicly for the first time at the launch event. So whatever the book launch event ends up being, it'll be premiered. And again, we're going to try to live stream it. So still figuring all that out, but just follow me on Instagram, follow my blog, and all of the announcements will be there. Yeah. And then the pilot is, I will just to like, you know, I guess temper expectations. It's a proof of concept pilot. So it's not like a full 40-page pilot, because that would have cost me like over $100,000 to do, like on a budget. Mm-hmm. So I did like the 12-minute version. So leaves a lot of questions, leaves a lot to be desired, but I did that on purpose. And then, you know, once we get this book out into the world, then I will revisit developing the series and go from there. Sorry, cool. I clapped in the mic.
I'll kill you.
That's exciting. Okay. Well, fine. I won't go watch the pilot, but
I can send it to you. I can send you a private link. Yeah. It's just not public right now. Yeah. Okay, but it is, it is really exciting, and it's a really good team. Yeah. And I felt really proud of myself for doing that, because I like wrote it, directed it. I did have a co-director who's amazing, Keely, and, but produced it, funded it, got all the locations. Like, so I was really proud of myself for that.
Yeah,
but
that's a big deal.
Yeah. So were it's only the beginning. I was in it. I play myself.
You play yourself?
Yeah. Her character is, you'll see her. Yes, I play me. Basically.
Is your plan, if you do move on with a series, or do you want to be in it and play yourself, or will you cast?
I would like to be in it. But I don't know if I'll play like the lead character, because I don't know yet exactly, like, you know, when I first envisioned it, I was like, oh, she'll be in her early 20s. And I'm like, dude, nobody cares about a white girl in her early 20s. Like, so it might be more interesting if she's like divorced and in her 30s and dating for the first time in New York City. Like, I haven't worked out those details yet. Mm-hmm. And then it all comes down to like, what funding do we get? Does it sell to a network and sit on a shelf, or do I try to self-fund this and produce it all myself? And then can we get a name attached to it? And if the name gets attached, then they put in some money. It's a lot of stuff like that. So I want to be in it, but I don't have to be like the lead character.
Playing yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think she'll be like an iteration inspired by, I don't think she'll be like exactly what was happening.
Right. But. Yeah. That makes sense. I was just curious, since you also act and all of that.
Yes. Also, fun fact, one more thing. I am briefly in a movie that is coming out in theaters April 26th. Ironically, do you guys know the band For King and Country?
Yeah, I've heard of them.
Nope.
Okay. They are a country music duo. Do you remember Rebecca St. James? Does that name ring a bell for you?
Yes.
Nope.
Okay, so you will enjoy this.
Wait for me.
Are you ready for this? It is about, so I'm in this, like, it's a huge feature film produced by Lionsgate. It's coming out in theaters. It's like one of their biggest premieres they've had. And it is basically about Rebecca St. James's family. So, and like Candace Cameron is in it. Yeah, it's a whole funny twist and turn of events, because my life, that my first theatrical release is basically about the Christian music industry.
That is funny.
So go see it. Unsung Hero. It's about moms, basically. I haven't seen it, so I don't even know if it's good, but it's about moms, I think.
Don't even get to watch your own movie.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
No, you guys would be so.
Or anything?
That is a whole other conversation of like the acting industry and all the things people don't know about it. But yeah, no, I was a small part, so I did not get invited to the Nashville premiere. But they did do a premiere, and I know, because I slayed my very tiny part. and yeah, so I haven't seen it yet. I only know, you know, the parts that I was in.
I mean, I would probably never go see that movie, but now I probably will, because I'm going to look out for you. Just gonna be like, I'm only here for Maddie Jo.
Killing the part of Southern Wife, it looks like.
Yes!
Okay. Oh my God. He's like already like,
all down with Southern accent.
I do. I have a really funny line. To be honest, it's just so funny that they even auditioned me the way that I did. I had like a full callback. Like I was in Italy, in Rome. It's my last night in Rome. And they're like, oh, can you do a callback? And I'm like, for this part that has like three lines that'll probably get cut. Okay. So like at 1 a.m. in Rome, I'm like doing this callback with the fucking Lionsgate, like full crew or, you know, full like production team, whatever. Mm-hmm. And the two guys from For King and Country. And I end up booking it. And then I get on set and they're like, oh, they're Australian. We loved your audition. Da, da, da. And I'm just like, wow, for this tiny little part. But I got a trailer. It was pretty rad. I was like, man, this is the good life. Yeah. I should be in more Christian movies.
Is the market easier?
It's time they start paying you back. All right.
Yeah. I was going to say, let's milk them for all they're worth.
Exactly. Exactly. That's I cannot fine. Wait I to get that. Like residuals from this. But yeah, so Unsung Hero in theaters next Friday.
Amazing. Go see it.
Go see it.
Or wait till it's streaming. I don't know if we want to give it a good box office opening. I always have mixed feelings about giving Christian movies.
Yeah.
Good box offices. That's when I go see the Freedom. What was it? I did an episode on it. I don't remember it. What was the Freedom one? Sound of Freedom.
Oh, Sound of Freedom. Yeah. So it's like that same. Yeah, I think. Yeah. Less in your face, maybe. I don't know. I don't know how.
She's like, I haven't seen it.
I read the script, but like it could very well just be like in terms of its religious undertones, like, oh, there's a church that like is nice to this family. I don't know if it's like super pushy how they like edited it and everything. I don't know. I've only read the script. So anyway, I'll stop talking now. This is an hour and 20 minutes.
Don't worry. We always go over.
We always go over. It's never. Yeah. I don't know. Like if we're talking, let's just let it happen. I guess. Cameron's like, yeah, but you don't edit. I do.
Yeah.
Okay, great. You plugged your socials, so I think we're good on that front. Thank you so much for being here. It was really nice to meet you and hear your story. And I'm actually just like really psyched about your pilot series now. That may or may not happen, but I hope it does because it sounds really funny and interesting.
Thank you.
Go get Maddie Jo's book on September 10th or order it or whatever.
Yes, order it.
And yes, order it. And if you go see Unsung Hero, watch for her. And yeah, we'll see you guys next time. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Cheers to Leaving. Please consider leaving a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. Subscribe and share with your friends and others who are on a journey of deconstruction and are looking to expand their horizons.
If you're looking for a community that understands what it's like leaving religion and are going through the same process as you, consider joining our Facebook support group. Be a part of the conversation, meet like-minded individuals, and get support. You can find the link in our show notes. We love hearing from you, so drop us a message, share your thoughts, or suggest topics you'd like us to discuss in future episodes. Email us at cheerstoleaving@gmail.com. Take care and catch you on the next episode of Cheers to Leaving.